Leafs Converts Hockey World. What's up? This is the Leafs Convo Podcast. I'm your host, Norman James. This is the Sunday Spectacular. I'm calling it that just because we're doing something early morning Sunday. And it's a rather long podcast when you compare it to some of our recent work. How about the Maple Leafs compared to their recent work? A nice, tidy hockey game. A 4-2 win in Washington. Not too bad. Post-game, Lars Eller running his mouth. What's this guy all about? Mike and I will talk about it, plus get into a whole host of other things. He's ready to go. I'm ready to go. I know you are too. So what do you say? Let's pod Sunday Spectacular styles. The Leafs Convo starts now. And here he is, the one and only Mike Augello. Hello, sir.
Good morning, Norman. How are you?
Not too bad. It was interesting watching a normal hockey game last night. The Leafs coming from behind to overtake and then triumph over the Washington Capitals. Outshot the Caps. Only one giveaway, 10 takeaways. It was kind of like a normal hockey game from the juggernaut beast that is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, it was a normal hockey game because of the way the Caps played, and I think that was the one of the concerns going into the game is, you know, obviously this is the Stanley Cup champions, and the team is basically the same other than Todd Reirden being the coach instead of Barry Trotz. But, you know, if you look at the play earlier in the game, and even Mike Babcock said afterward that, you know, the first 10 minutes were not good, and the Caps were – you know, trying to use their size advantage, to sort of muscle the Leafs around a little bit. You know, Morgan Rielly got more attention yesterday than he has in any of the first five games. But at a certain point, the Leafs started to adjust and they used their speed to sort of negate that contact and played a pretty good game, I would say, in the last two periods. But I have to say, though, they're up 3-2. In the third period, there was a sequence of about, I would say, a minute and a half where they couldn't get the puck out of the zone. And Frederik Andersen, you know, at that point, I think the Caps had about three shots on goal. And in that span, Frederik Andersen was going post to post to post constantly. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of chances with Oshie, and I'm not sure if Ovechkin was out there, but it was total panic in the Leaf zone. They had no answer. And these are moments that, you know, when you look at this team and say, oh my God, they're so great. Again, it's, you know, the defensive ineptitude at times negates their offensive greatness. So, and that's something that Mike Babcock, you know, I'm sure is going to be working on with this team going forward.
But they were taking on the Stanley Cup champions. You mentioned that right off the bat. You knew that the Caps were going to have some sort of a pushback. There was going to be a quarter long. You knew it was going to be intense, where the Caps were going to come at them pretty hard. And you said that the Leafs had no answer. They did have an answer in Freddie Andersen. The key is here, the Leafs were able to pass a test that they hadn't taken up until game, five or six. And the conventional process of Leafs wins, Leaf games to this point has been, you know, knock them down, drag them out. You score, we'll score more. This is a situation where they came from behind twice. And while they did have to batten down the hatch, well, I don't know if you could say batten down the hatches or just kind of, you know, do their best the Keystone Cops impression. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they were able to pull away, get the empty netter, and they go perfect on the road trip. They come back to play the Kings. I want to see this team win in a variety of ways, Mike. I've mentioned this already several mm-hmm. times. I want to make sure everybody on that ice surface can contribute. You have no passengers. And last night, Saturday in Washington, we saw an example of how this team levels down from the star players. Even though Matthews got a goal and then assists, he did seem to be, I wouldn't say invisible. Clearly, one of the best players in the world can't be invisible. But, you know, it was not like he was running game. And John Tavares as well, you know, it was a hard-fought game for those guys. But the Josh Levos, the Kasperi Kapanens, these are the guys that were, you know, popping in goals and, making things happen on a team that more often than not can rely on its star players to carry the day. But those games in between, who's going to step up? And we're still waiting on Nazem Kadri to get his, you know, SHIT together, and it's going to come. But in the meantime, I was really happy for Josh Lebo to get that goal, to the game winner. You know, I've written them off on this podcast. It's documented. I've written them off. And that last night was one of those games where we were able to see, some of the support guys, some of the guys you don't hear from very much, step up and, you know, get theirs, and obviously put themselves in good stead with the head coach too, Mike. So no, at the end of the day, they got a win. It wasn't perfect. You look at the stat sheet; it wasn't a typical Maple Leafs win or exercise in hockey.
Yeah,
but that's okay, Mike. You know, because you know when you're going full tilt, doing one thing all the time, everybody's talking about breaking records and scoring all these goals, and everything just seems so lopsided. When there's too much of that, Mike, I'm waiting for the Reaper to pop out and rear his ugly head.
Well,
this was an opportunity to kind of break down from all of that hype, all of that pomp and circumstance, play a normal hockey game, and I'm excited to see what they can do against the Kings on Monday.
Well, I mean, that was the positive of the game. I mean, you know, as you said, I mean, up to that point, they had 25 goals and 15 of the 25 had come from Tavares and Matthews. And I had said, I think on the previous convo that I thought, you know, they needed to get that secondary offense jump started. Well, I mean, you know, Parlin Lindholm gets his first goal on a nice deflection, you know, Lebo on that second power play because, you know, Tavares had taken a stick to the face. So, you know, they put out the second power play and Lebo scores on a sort of a mad scramble where, you know, he gets the puck and buries it by Holpe. Kapanen, being out there with Matthews, you know, it was a pretty good goal for him. And then Matthews cleans up with his 10th goal right in front to ice the game away. I mean, yeah, their star players played well, but their secondary players played well. And I have to give notice to I thought Igor Azaganov had his best game as a Leaf. He was a little more physical, and he made a couple nice plays in the offensive zone, especially the one where he kicked the puck to Matthews for a play. So there were encouraging things, but you know, I think, you know, it suits Babcock's purpose sometimes to be glasses half empty and point out the negative, because, you know, I think, you know, for them to be a team that aspires to where everybody wants them to go, they've got to eliminate some of the negative things that occur in these wins. They can't, in a situation like this, you know, be allowed to be, you know, get drunk on their offensive greatness. They really have to be more, I'd say, grounded in terms of, well, we've got to do these other things. And if we do these other things, then the offense, you know, because of our talent, will take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if that's like the reason why, you know, somebody like Lars Eller last night in the post-game comments, former Hab who is playing for the Caps and won the cup last year with them, you know, comes out after the game, asked if he was impressed with the Leafs and says, well, we were just playing against Crosby and Malkin. So everything kind of drops off from there. It's not that special, to be honest. It's a good team, meaning Toronto, like a lot of others. They probably will be a playoff team, I would think. Well,
thanks, Lars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
thanks for your 2 cents, bud.
Yeah, it's like the thing. Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, they're going to be hiring you at Sportsnet or TSN for your expert analysis.
No, the Danish version of Sportsnet / TSN, whatever it is over there. Those comments to me reek of jealousy. They reek of fear. They reek of somebody who shook. I mean, not only did the Maple Leafs come from behind twice to beat the Stanley Cup champions, Lars Eller has Montreal Canadiens stains all over his being. You got to think that there is a disdain for the Maple Leafs just built into that guy based on the fact that, you know, he was a member of the Habs at a time when the Habs were a couple of levels above the Maple Leafs. And just to watch the Leafs, you know, supersede the Habs 10 times over and then now beat the Stanley Cup champions the way they did. Lars Eller throwing that kind of garbage out there. I mean, you don't hear that kind of stuff from Holtby or Ovechkin or,
No.
but Lars Eller. I mean, again, though, that's why you have to take it with a grain of salt. Like Lars Eller, it'd be like, the Leafs getting beat by the Kings tomorrow, and then Josh Levo pipes up and says, "Yeah, the Kings, they shouldn't even be in the league." Like, Josh Levo, buddy, you're like 2 seconds away from playing in the Southern Quebec League. Like, keep it quiet. But again, if you think you've heard enough about the Maple Leafs now, this is nothing. I would advise anybody who hates the Maple Leafs or who can't stand them, pick another sport, because this team, even Mike Babcock, he's laying the, he's warning everyone. There's 5 to 7 years here where this team could win no cups. It could win three cups. The time has come. And Mike, we've been through many a period where the Leafs were, the highest value team in the league. They got all the coverage from TSN, Sportsnet, and they had Brian McCabe and Paul Maurice coaching, and Matt Sundin playing with a Jonas Hoglund or whatever, and they were getting a lot of attention that many fans across the country and right across hockey felt was unjust or unwarranted based on the personnel. Well, now you can't look at the Maple Leafs and go, well, you know what? You got to give the Calgary Flames their due. I need to hear more about the Vancouver Canucks. The Leafs are, just stacked with one star after another. They have one of the best players in the league who's not even in the country. He's in Sweden. I mean, this team has all the money. It has the boy wonder as the GM. It has the most highest paid coach in the league, behind the bench. I mean, this team is it's the biggest team in hockey, and it's now playing like the biggest team in hockey. And it's the Leaf talk and the Leaf hype and the Leaf coverage is going nowhere. It's only going to intensify, and it's going to get more convoluted. It's going to get bigger. It's going to get crazier. It's going to get more in your face. It's going to piss you off even more. So if you don't like it, get into cricket or something like that.
When I think and when I hear of those things where I'm like, and I've heard other reporters say this, I've heard people on the radio, on TV say, it's only four games, it's only six games, and already, people are telling me they're sick of hearing about Toronto. It's like, okay, it's a meritocracy. It's based on how good a team is playing. So are you telling me that if the Montreal Canadiens were 5-1 and standing on their head and scoring goals and buckets, that it wouldn't be sickening to hear, the fans of the Blue Blanc and Rouge, that, how pounding their chest to how great their team was? Of course, you'd be sick of it if you were in Toronto because, in general, you hate the Canadians. And Toronto is popular among Leaf fans and in the GTA and in most other quadrants in Canada, like in Vancouver. They hate the Leafs because they think everything is about the Leafs. Well, it's not, but when they're a good team, that's natural. So, like when reporters like myself and other commentators are talking about the Leafs, it's not because they have to. It's because they want to, and B, they're being directed by, the facts of what is going on in the league in terms of them being one of the best teams in the league to have to talk about them.
Well, Mike, the inferiority complex that permeates across the country directed at Toronto. Like, it's just the way it is. I mean, you're an honorary Canadian. You're in Buffalo. I mean, if the United States and Canada started divvying up property, I mean, Canada would probably throw a couple dollars in on Buffalo, and you guys would become a part of Canada. At the end of the day, like, it's the inferiority complex transcends geography. It transcends, history. It sports is perfect for it's a perfect vehicle to either act superior or act inferior. And one of the things that I always remind people, whether on social media or through the YouTube comment section, don't spend so much time hating on other teams. Spend more time focused on your team. You project an automatic superiority when, you don't spend most of your time tearing down what other teams are doing. I'm not like that, Mike. I mean, even I just in sports when I played, and just more focused on trying to get things done for me. And as a fan, look, I can't stand the Boston Red Sox right now. And your Yankees did a nice job putting them away. Thanks, Mike. Good job.
Thank you.
But,
Sure.
I don't get up every day and go, well, what are the Montreal Canadiens doing? I hope they get beat, or you know, the Vancouver Canucks, you know, if they get a couple of wins, they're going to start to, you know, they're going to be 10 points closer to the Leafs. And there's no way I can stomach the Canucks being anywhere near my Leafs.
Yeah.
And but again, Mike, it's Canadian history is all about disproportionate representation. And there are more people in the Golden Horseshoe than there are in BC and Alberta combined.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sometimes when, you know, you have to make that point to people out west, or it's like, you gotta understand, Vancouver's an amazing city, but Toronto's way, way, way bigger. It's bigger than Chicago now. It's a huge, huge city. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the crown jewel of the league. You know, I know it doesn't have all the Stanley Cups, but you know, it's, you know, the first All-Star game was at the Gardens, the first televised game. The Gardens, the Conn Smythe Trophy is the Gardens. I mean, the Maple Leafs, you know, all the great players, non-Francophone players, you know, a lot of them played in the at Maple Leaf Gardens. I mean, it's the center of the game. And, you know, for a long time, that the history and yeah, just sort of the hockey infrastructure based in Toronto would, you know, you'd be able to brag about how, well, you know, Toronto's got the league offices, and there's the Hall of Fame. There's all kinds of things happening in Toronto. That's why Toronto's the capital of the game. You know, our hockey team is, well, you know, it is what it is, but we've got all these other things. Now you can kind of say, well, this is the cherry on top. Now the team fits the environment, Mike. I really don't know where we're going here, but you know, at the end of the day, I think fans just have to buckle up. And the Leafs have sucked for so long. Mm-hmm. And I've tweeted this out, Mike. You know, people don't like it, but considering where the Leafs have come from and the doldrums and the despair that they've experienced, they owe the NHL an ass kicking 10 times over, good ass kicking over and over and over, because the league has it coming, and it's high time the Leafs get their due. And let's see if they can go get it, because they're certainly positioned to get it.
Well, you know, the mentality of some fans out there, and you know, and I understand this in some regard, is, you know, like for an example in baseball, I'm a Yankees fan, and my second favorite team is whoever's playing the Red Sox. So basically, I think, you know, you have a lot of fans in Canada and a lot of fans in other markets in the U.S. that are basically like, I mean, my favorite team is the Vancouver Canucks, and whoever beats Toronto, that's the, it, so, you know, if you're expecting, and I always laugh at this when it comes down to the playoffs and there's one Canadian team left, and you expect the entire country of Canada to unite around the Ottawa Senators or something like that. No, Canadian, you know, fans of Canadian teams, I don't think they want to see the Senators win. And I think it's only natural that if a Vancouver Canuck fan, their team is, you know, 29th in the league, they're not going to be rooting for the Leafs to win. They're probably going to be rooting for the Leafs to lose. It's understandable. But
now, Mike, you'd rally. Listen, people don't want to rally around the Sens or rally around Calgary or Edmonton or Vancouver. If the Leafs go deep, you don't have to ask that question. Can the country rally around the Maple Leafs? It already is. There are Leaf fans everywhere, Mike. You know how it is. Like there are Yankee fans who it's hereditary. It's in the family. You know, grandpa, dad, kid, whatever. That's what you are. And out west, when there were hockey fans out west, they got the paper all those years ago when there was just six teams, and you know, they hear it on the radio. And grandpa was a Leaf fan, dad's a Leaf fan, boys, the kids are Leaf fans. It's just, they've grown up Leaf fans. And that, you know, that presence is right across the country, you know, in the same way that maybe Montreal is, maybe to a little bit greater extent. But you don't have to ask the country, hey, will you rally around the Leafs? The country is going to rally around the Leafs, because there are Leaf fans in every pocket of every corner of this country. And you know what? There are Leaf fans across the United States too. You know, the interesting thing is, I mean, this is kind of trivial, but you look at my wife and I were talking about this. You look at Justin Bieber, you know, he's the, you know, biggest pop star. He's a Leaf fan. He, and I got to give him credit. He was at Centre Bell a few years ago, And he got up there and he said, everybody was out cheering. He goes, "All right, everybody, I got something for everybody to repeat." So he started throwing all these chants out and he goes, "All right, go Leafs, go." And they booed him. But that takes nuts. And the Sean Mendes kid, the next big thing out of Toronto, he's a Leaf fan. I mean, you have, a lot of these a lot of these Toronto stars who've gone on to do massive things representing the brand. They're all big Leaf fans. And, again, I think for me, I kind of feel like everything's starting to, the Leafs that we have wanted, Mike, as fans and supporters and lamenters of this organization for years, they're developing now, and it's going to be a fun ride. And whether this team wins three cups, two cups, one cup, no cup over the next 5, 7 years, it's going to be a blast to watch a team that, is on most nights should win and is expected to win and could do some really incredible things when you contrast that with a lot of the garbage that we've had to put up with over the years and, intermittent moments of competency. And so I think we're on our way, and long or the short of it, let's enjoy it. And people who don't want to enjoy it, well, you know what? Take up knitting, get out of sports, get out of hockey, because it's just going to get worse for you.
Well, a couple things from last night that I think are notable and we should discuss. Coming from Elliot Friedman, who's one of the best in the business. He was talking about the Nylander situation, and him and Nick Kiprios were mentioning. First of all, they mentioned offer sheet. They didn't say that there was a lot of interest out there regarding Nylander and offer sheet, but it's a situation where the last offer sheet out there from the NHL, and I wrote about this yesterday, was Ryan O'Reilly 5 years ago, and it happened after over a month of basically an impasse in terms of a contract signing. So, a team out there looking for offense could go down that road, but for the price tag that Nylander's asking for, which is probably in the $7 to $8 million range, the compensation would be a first, second, and third round pick. And the thing is, there's no guarantees for that team if they sign an offer sheet and the Leafs don't match, that that first round pick is lottery protected. So that's why I think that, and amongst a number of issues, why Nylander will not be signed to an offer sheet. And I wrote about, why Matthews and Marner won't be in my column yesterday. But there doesn't seem to be any movement other than now and I've been saying this for 3 months, the bridge deal coming into more of a focus. And they showed a graphic yesterday about, Artemi Panarin's bridge deal with Chicago, and Kucherov's bridge deal with Tampa Bay, which was around 4.7 million. Nylander is not in the range of those players. So if he does sign a 2 or 3 year bridge deal, it's probably going to be in the 4.5 to 4.75 range. And at this point, I think all they want to do is get him signed, because eventually, I'm of the mind that, if he gets a bridge deal, and with this ordeal, this is sort of paving his road out of Toronto eventually, but not immediately. He could come back, sign, and be here for a year or two. But I truly think now Nylander is going to be of that big three, is going to be the one that doesn't stay long term.
Yeah, I predicted that some time ago, even before these contractual hiccups. What impasse, the vibe that it creates, what does this do for this expectation, this notion, this hope that the Leaf stars will agree to contracts that are justifiable based on what they produce, but also palatable for the organization and obviously workable under the salary cap in order to fit everybody in, fit all the pieces in so this team can maintain and take a legitimate run with lots of talent, side by side. I mean, what's this William Nylander, what is he suggesting to Matthews and Marner? Heck, guys, there are more important things than cohesiveness and loyalty, right?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, and I have no idea what the contact between Nylander and his teammates have been. But the mentality of most of these players is, we need to get paid, and I understand that because that's just human nature. You want to get as much as you can, and the team is going to fight against that because there is a salary cap. Otherwise, if there was no salary cap, I don't think these situations would be any problem. It's a bottomless pit of money from MLS and E, so they would just sign them. But they do have a cap structure to work within, and that's why I think they're fighting against Nylander making 7 or 8, because their valuation of him is not as a $7 or $8 million player as of yet. And that the bridge deal allows him to say, okay, here's a bigger case for me to be paid that type of way. And at that point, the Leafs might not be able to pay him that, but at least it gets him in for a year or 2 or 3 or whatever, how long it is. Now Matthews was mentioned yesterday, and I again it I was going to write about this today, and I think it might be a more logical and a more understandable pathway. I mean, everybody wants the Leafs to sign Matthews for 8 years, and I'm sure the Leafs do because it gives him cost certainty for a lot for basically the bulk of his prime. But if you look at Kane and Taves in Chicago, Tavares with the Islanders, Stamkos, Doughty, all these guys signed 5-year deals out of their entry level. And it was for a little bit less money. In the case of Tavares, it was 5.5, which that won't be for Matthews. In the case of Kane and Taves, I think it was 7.5. His representatives may want to sign a 5-year deal. Now, that would make him potentially a UFA at age 25 or 26, I believe. But for the Leafs, this might be a situation where it would be beneficial in one respect. If he signs a 5-year deal during the season this year and it kicks in next year, 1 year after that deal expires, the John Tavares contract expires, which means the Leafs could sign him for whatever, almost whatever they want to, let's see, in 2024, when the contract comes up. Now, obviously, it gives Matthews the opportunity to go anywhere he wants if he wants to leave Toronto. But that's the risk with that. That's the risk you take. But that might be the way that the Matthews deal gets finally done. And according to Friedman yesterday, they're really working hard to get a deal done in season because I think they want to avoid all the potential offer sheet crap that has been out there for a little time.
Mike, I get the sense that Auston Matthews is wise beyond his years. He's a gentleman. He's thoughtful. He's well spoken. There are times when he scores and doesn't celebrate. There are other times when he does, and that to me indicates a guy who knows what he's doing, and each triumph means something, and some more than others. You've got to believe that he knows what he's into right now. You've got to believe he knows what he has the capability here and what the possibility. The guy, he's going to be the biggest name in hockey. With all due respect to Connor McDavid, I mean the de facto leader captain of the biggest team in the game, coming back into a period where dominance for the Maple Leafs is going to be expected. It's a logical thing to think. I mean, this guy has it all, and you have to believe that. We can talk about contracts, whether 8 years, 5 years, 12 million, 11 million, whatever, haircut, bonus. He was first overall pick. This is going to be his team. I mean, he's going to have an affinity and an affection for the Maple Leafs brand. Like, honestly, it doesn't get any bigger than this. Like, what is he going to do? Go to the Dallas Stars and be the key player there? I mean, even the Rangers. I mean, it's New York. It's the capital of everything, but not hockey. The capital of the game is Toronto. This is it.
Well,
And so you've got to think that, we talk about, well, how much is he going to get? Is he going to hold the team ransom. This is his team, and he's just getting started. So, he's got to be compensated accordingly. But this isn't a Nylander situation where, Nylander knows he's down on the depth chart and he probably feels like he doesn't get the love and respect that he deserves. Well, that's just the fact that, William, you're playing with a bunch of guys who are hungry and who are just as good or better than you. I mean, be mature and, join the club. With Austin Matthews, I mean, he's either on par or better than the rest of his teammates just based on the fact that this kid is incredible. So, I'm not too worried about some of the contractual, these milestones or these important moments along the way when it involves Austin Matthews, because I think he senses what he's involved in and what can be possible as the top guy on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think it'll all come out in the wash. Anyway, we gotta wrap up here soon. So do this and whatever else you want to throw on.
Okay. Well, just a brief point about Matthews. I mean, if you see the direction he's going in terms of things to do outside of hockey, like, his recent GQ spread and like, being, all that stuff that he wants to do. I've heard like talk about him wanting to start some sort of fashion line or something like that. That doesn't happen if you're in Dallas, like you said. I think that happens, you create yourself a platform when you're Austin Matthews and a star player and you're in Toronto, a megalopolis like Toronto. You can't do something like that in Pittsburgh. So like if Sidney Crosby wanted to put out a clothing line, I don't think it's going to work, but I think it will work in Toronto. So it's to his benefit as well. But anyway,
Look, Sidney Crosby, God love him. I mean, he's as interesting as saltine crackers, at the bottom of the bag, all crushed up. I mean, he's one of my favorite hockey players ever, but he's got no personality, and there's a reason why, he spits out a couple lines in a Tim Hortons commercial, and that's about it. Austin Matthews, he's got this look to a man. I mean, older women think he's, or think he's amazing. Younger girls look up to him, but he's got a really devilish kind of chivalrous quality to him that is we haven't it's just kind of bubbling at the surface, and he's got a lot of potential, Mike. But I think the key is for this guy is to create a legacy along with Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock and the rest of these cats, to be that guy. To be that centerpiece of a Stanley Cup champion, and I think with Austin Matthews, that's the guy. Once he starts to indicate that he's willing to do what it takes to make sure things are kept intact, and I'm sure he's John Tavares has Matthews' word that something's going to be arranged, because Tavares may not have come here if there were another circumstance that he had to confront. So anyway, Mike, what do you have for us before we go?
Two quick questions from from Twitter. Kirk Anderson, K Joseph Anderson on Twitter. What are the Leafs' chances of making a trade for a top four D before Christmas, and who do they trade? Well, I first of all, I don't think a trade for top four D is going to happen before Christmas unless it involves Nylander, and I don't think they're going to trade Nylander as an unsigned RFA. So I would think that the top four D, if they do get one, it'll be before the deadline. It could be a rental. It could be a number of players. There are a lot of UFA defensemen out there. There are more defensemen out there with a year left on their contract, and I think that would be where the Leafs are going to go, because if Gardner goes in free agency, which I think is going to happen because he's going to expect to get over $6 million in free agency, they want basically a safety net of a veteran guy for a year. And that's why I think if they're going to trade significant assets at the deadline, it's not going to be for somebody who's a pure rental. The other question was from Wendell Mania. Would you consider Igor Korshkov a bust now? Now, Korshkov was the second round pick behind Matthews in the 2016 draft, taken in front of a guy like Alex DeBrincat, who's loading up this year right now with Chicago. I don't think Korshkov is a bust because he's playing pretty good in the KHL, and I think he will come over to North America after the KHL season. He was prepared to do so, but I think he read the landscape and saw that, you know, the Marlies were stacked with wingers mm-hmm. and wouldn't get a ton of playing time, whereas where he's playing right now, he's getting a ton of playing time basically as a first or second line winger. So I do think he'll be over next year, and they don't usually promote somebody right into the team immediately. But if you look last night, the size factor in terms of caps, I mean, I think that's where the Leafs will also go before the deadline, is adding size. And actually on the panel last night, they were talking about Josh Anderson from Columbus, who might be on the trade block because they're using him as a fourth liner, and that the Leafs had been interested in the past in him. So
Mark Hunter's not with the team anymore, and Mark Hunter probably would have drafted him with the London Knights. And I'm just saying that as an aside. I'm not saying that's the be all and end all. You know, Mike, we get on Ron Hainsey a lot. 23 minutes against the Caps, plus one, had an assist, a nice little feathered it through on that that shot that who got that, Kapanen? I think Kapanen scored that. Yeah. You know, and that's what I do like about some of these defensemen, is that, you know, we saw Igor Azarganov bomb one at the name escapes me, but he hit a guy, hit one of the Capitals defenders or forwards in the shin, and it really, you know, hurt him. But, you know, it's like, whatever happened to just a little bit of finesse from the blue line, just feather a shot in, and, you know, so it doesn't hit anybody. If it gets to the net, you have a better chance of scoring or something happening positive than if the puck doesn't even make it near the net. But anyway, Ron Hainsey had himself a nice little game last night. And, you know, again, I've already said he should be planning out his retirement. The guy should be planning a trip to Peru or Egypt, or, you know, going to Club Med. You know, he shouldn't be playing 23 minutes a night, but, you know, he has to do it. And, you know, Jake Gardner had a couple of assists last night, and good for him. But, you know, Mike, I know a lot of the analytics people are going to be upset about this, and, you know, maybe their data tells us that Jake Gardner will be a Leaf for life, but my hunch is that this is his last year with the Maple Leafs. And for a lot of people, they'll rejoice over that.
Ron Hainsey should not be a 23-minute defenseman. He had a good game last night. It was probably his best of the year, but he should be on the bottom pairing. Yeah. Playing about 14, 15 minutes and being a special teams guy. And that, I think that eventually will happen when they do add on defense. And Gardner for the two assists, and one of the two assists I disputed, because it looked like when Connor Brown fed it through to Levo, it went off of Andreas Janssen, and Janssen should have gotten the assist. So I thought Gardner should have only had one. But that, the point being, mm-hmm. was there was a play in the first period where Gardner did a flyby defensively on Ovechkin, and Ovechkin came in and had a good, or I think it was Ovechkin, and he had a great chance on a 2-on-1 break. And I'm like, you just can't allow that to be, you know, what the dynamic of a player that you play 20 minutes a night. He can't be that bad defensively. And that's why I think eventually the Leafs will move on from Jake.
Well, Gardner. You have a guy like Gardner who has a lot of positives, but he's, you know, the ineptitude of his, you know, defensive game and his decision making is—it's just evident. And you know, you have a guy who's close to being put out to pasture, who's playing, you know, top pairing minutes, which tells me that the Leafs' defense needs to be not necessarily repaired, but altered and bolstered. And that is a goal for Kyle Dubas to, you know, to focus on and ultimately achieve. So in the meantime, hopefully the Leafs can keep scoring, and when they have to, win games like a normal hockey team, and, you know, get to my 115-point prediction. Anyway, Mike, gotta go, man.
Thanks, Norm.
That's going to wrap up this edition of the Leafs Convo podcast. At Norman James TLC, at the Leafs Convo, at Mike in Buffalo. Don't forget to check out the YouTube page while you're there. Subscribe. We've got all kinds of good stuff going on. Ronaldo Brown and Babtalk, Jillian McLeod and the Game Changer, Kyle Outridge and the Take on the Marlies. It just keeps getting better and better every single time we put something on wax. For Mike Augello, I'm Norman James. We'll talk to you soon. The Leafs Convo is out.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.